Blog Talk Radio. I don't know about the rest of you, but I love this time of the day. I love how the cool, crisp night air kisses the ground, leaving behind a gentle layer of dew. I love looking up into the night sky and seeing the moon shining down upon us like an old, trusted friend. I look forward to spending our Thursday nights here together on Blog Talk Radio as we travel together on this journey into the night.
Hi to everybody, Lisa.
Hello, everyone. Glad to have you with us tonight.
We have a great night for you planned. Lisa's actually on a road trip again this week, so she's in Tennessee this time. So So anyway, we have a great show planned for everybody tonight. This is our second week of our Halloween Deadly Reads birthday celebration, and tonight it's a night of music. Movie music. Check me out, movie magic with Hector Casillas. Now, Hector has worked in the television and movie industry for several years, with several projects dating back to 1995. The Shadow in the Bed is Hector's current project. It's a psychological horror, and is his first feature film. He has been working on this film for the past 10 years, now in the final stages of post-production. Hector has also received several awards for his work, such as in 1994, he received an Emmy for Best Producer for Best Producer of Cara Acara con Maria Laria. In 1998, he received an Emmy for Best Editor for Best News Story. And in 2000, he received a Golden Mike for Best Informative News Segment for Special News Series. So as you can tell, Hector has really been busy all these years in the entertainment business. So why don't we bring him on and give him a warm Deadly Reads welcome. Hi, Hector. Welcome to the show.
Hi,
well,
Hector.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure, really.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry I slaughtered a few of those names, but my Spanish is a little bit rusty.
No, it's okay. That's fine. Even me, I cannot pronounce it.
So, Hector, now, could you please tell us how you became involved in the entertainment industry, such as television and movies and all that?
Well, I had almost 40 years in studying in television. You can imagine how old I am. But I was from the school, I was, a magnet to do something in entertainment. And, I started in Mexico, and I started to look for a TV station with cameras, and because I had a degree in electronics, and I started repairing the cameras, the machines, in those years, and then slowly I started going to the studio and start filming with those big cameras in those days. Start from there, I've been in the editing room, in the directing, producing, and all the levels of television at the beginning. But my goal was to do a movie. I always want to do a movie, and horror movies, the most attractive for me. Mm-hmm. Sci-fi horror is, I love it, but it's so expensive to do, like for me right now, to do it. Those years when I started my first movie 10 years ago, I tried to do sci-fi horror. But at the beginning was television, that was the closest one in Mexico, and when I moved to United States and I get all the papers and all that stuff, legal stuff, and I tried to put the movie all together, but that was hard. And I started producing in the television, the network in Spanish, and that was very successful for me. And one time I said, let's try to do a movie, and I discovered it's not that easy.
Right. Well, I would think that making a horror movie would be more expensive and more detailed than say a non-action or a drama type movie. Correct?
Yes, because of the special effects. You're right. When I was planning this movie, the monster supposed to be a guy with a suit, and I shot it like that. But in those years, almost 11 years ago, I thought, well, in the future, if I have that money, I will put it a digital monster. And then, thanks God, I shot it twice without the monster and with an empty space. And I'm working with that empty space and putting that digital monster. You're right, it's more expensive. I think I would do it differently if I knew now what I know. I'll start a drama with no special effect, because the special effects is the ones it's been delaying me all these years.
Right.
Right. I can imagine. It's come a long way in how they're done with the special effects. You look at a movie that was filmed, say, 20 years ago, at the special effects that back then we thought was miraculous. You look at it now and you're like, oh, wow. So I think it would be really difficult.
One of the things is 11 or almost 11 years ago, when I started to preparing to, well, scheduling and planning the movie, everybody wanted to do it in a standard definition, because HD was there, but it was something new. The TV sets were like a $10,000 in electronic stores, and I said, well, let's do it in HD. That's why now I can finish it, because now it's 4K and all that high-end formats. But at the beginning was a drama to try to do it in HD. Well, that was very nice, because now the HD is or normal standard definition, and it's one of the concepts I was struggling at the beginning, because some friends, other friends, shot a movie in a standard definition, and they're now, I cannot do anything because it's too low in quality to bring it to high definition.
Right. Yeah. You know, I had thought about, I had a short story that I wanted to do just a YouTube, you know, short movie, just a short project. But even that, I just can't do it, because, like you said, it's really expensive. And I know just shooting for YouTube is not like shooting a movie, but I thought about it. And I thought, you know, I don't want to do that because it's so low end, you know, like you said, it's so low end. It doesn't give the story, the character, you know, the, what it, you know, deserves. So I decided to not do that.
Yeah. And then, well, but now I understand the story is the principal factor of the movie, because at the beginning I was, the effect, the main character, but no, the story. Thanks God, I got very good actors and very nice. Because it was a super low budget. They didn't receive anything. I spent in the food, in the permits, and all that stuff. Right now, the movie is in the $100,000. So I spent already.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you hear of movies that were, you know, that they didn't hardly spend anything on, but they had such a quirky thing about them that they end up being cult classics. You know, I mean, you could sit back and think on that. But there's been several of them over the years that they weren't, you know, high budget, multi-million-dollar productions. You know, but they end up being famous because they're cult classics. So who knows? You may have one of those in the future.
That's true. Sometimes some movies are so bad, they are so good.
Look at the Blair Witch Project. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of chintzy. I thought, but it took off and was so popular. You know,
yeah, it is popular. They've made more, so yeah.
Yeah, so you never know what's going to catch on. You know, people are looking for something different, and you might just be offering it.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
We
never know.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah.
I have to finish it.
Well, I saw the clip for it of your movie. And it looks really good. I'm anxious to see it. So the little promo that you had for it, I was like, oh, you know, that's gonna be good. It caught my attention, and it kept my attention, and so I'm looking forward to it.
I wish you the best on it. It's been a long journey, but thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, your hard work. Sometimes long journeys are the best. Sometimes those long ones are the best, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell us
about some of the other projects you've been involved in. The ones like the one you got the Emmy for and the different awards and stuff. Tell us about those.
Well, when I was in Telemundo working as a producer, I spent 5 years working as a special projects producer. And one of my favorites, because in television you're looking for ratings. And then when it's not ratings, you can do very investigative reports, and it's some of the Emmys and all the mics I got were when it's not ratings, but when the TV is like a business, and they want ratings, they want viewers. And I discovered that one of the very, subjects was extraterrestrial. And then I did something, but the station didn't want, they didn't want it to do something like that. And then I did something behind the backs of my boss, and I shot like a promo for a series, because I didn't have the series already. And the promo was the reporter in the downtown, looking at the downtown Los Angeles, and the cameraman was shooting to him, and then the reporter stopped. Like it's like a breaking news. And then tell the cameraman, look, over there. And the camera turned, and it was like a UFO floating in the back, in the downtown area. And then that was my promo, and I put it in the air just to start promoting the series I was planning to shoot. That was so amazing, so successful, that the station gave me the money to finish it and go to Area 51, to go to Roswell, to do a series of news stories about this subject. And it was amazing because the ratings was so spectacular that every switch I did something about first Area 51, next Roswell, next was a phantom in some hotel. But the one I love it was Area 51, because we went to Area 51 with the reporter and the cameraman. And we sleep in Rachel. That is a little town. It's closer to the entrance of Area 51. So nobody knows about Area 51.
Yeah.
But you can go and you see the sign where it said, if you cross this line, you will lose all your citizen privileges and you will be arrested. And it's fantastic. Yeah, now you can see all the sensors in the ground, and always a car of the government in the top of the hill, just waiting if you cross it. because what was so successful, I went twice to Area 51, but the next time was better because I prepared myself better as a producer, and I knew the workers of Area 51, they fly them from Las Vegas to Area 51 in a plane. But some don't like to fly. And then they go in a bus, it's a white bus. And then what happened? When they come out, where they are parking. And then we stay all day waiting for that bus until we saw it, and then we followed the bus until the bus parked in some remote area where the cars are parked in like no buildings, nothing. And then we stop. Mm-hmm. We put the camera in the shoulders, the recorder with the mic, and I have a little other camera. We have two cameras covering, and then we try to interview the workers of Area 51 to tell. Please tell us what you feel about working in this secret, nobody knows, supposed to, it's not in the map. But we never expect a reaction of one of the workers. They went to his truck, and he went to the back of the truck, and he took like a hammer and tried to hit us. That footage was amazing. And then they report us to the sheriff, and we knew that sheriff was looking for us, because when we were back to Rachel, the guy in the restaurant said, you're the guys the sheriff are looking for you. What? They're looking for us? And then we went to Las Vegas, and then we went to another place, and they never, get caught or something like that, and they never report us to the station. But that's one of the adventures we got, we did. And,
yeah.
I love that. I love that investigation. And but
yeah, it sounds exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting times.
So, you know, that tells me that if they're that torn up or if they're that concerned about keeping people out and trying to keep people away from that area, they definitely are hiding something from the general public. You know, I've heard several arguments that it's not actually space alien technology and things like that they're hiding. It's other things, you know. So, yeah. What is that your thoughts, that it is indeed the space stuff?
When I did my investigation, I did very. Mm-hmm. I interviewed a lot of people. I interviewed even a guy who was working over there, and they have a lot of levels of secrecy, mm-hmm. even inside of the Area 51. And the main thing they cover is the super technology they are preparing mm-hmm. for the next years, and then they had. Things from outer space. Now, if it's a UFO or something, but they have something they are trying to use. They are trying to reverse engineering to see what is it. But I don't know if it's a UFO.
Yeah.
I don't know. But what I know is they move everything they have to another facility like Area 51. I think it's in Arizona. It's a very secret uh-huh. place. It's a new place they had a long time ago. They moved everything over there. But it's a lot of speculation. But my opinion is they have very advanced prototypes of planes. And
mm-hmm.
believe it or not, I saw one when I was walking one day in my... I was working with my wife. My wife was pregnant for my daughter, and then she loved to walk. One day we walked, and then you know that was after all these reports I did, and I had my eye ready. So something happened, but that day
mm-hmm.
something happened. When I was looking in the sky, I saw. Not a plane, but it was like a cylinder with no wings. When I saw it, there was like a airplane, but it can camouflage itself. You can
mm-hmm.
see through the airplane. When I saw it, I knew it was not a UFO. There was a
right.
plane for the United
oh, okay.
States trying to, something happened, and then they stop a little bit, just to see it, and then try to camouflage itself, and something happened. I don't know if it was a mistake or not, but there was like a, for almost a minute. And the thing is, I have a camera in my hand. That this event was before any smartphone. I have a little handheld camera to shoot my wife, but I was so amazed. I didn't turn my camera to see it. When I realized I had the camera in my hand, I tried to shoot it and disappear. It was something amazing.
Wow.
And the thing I believe that the government is in Area 51 is just technology from all government trying to
mm-hmm.
advance that technology. And because what I saw was from this world, but so advanced.
Right.
Right. We will see it in the next 20 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I mean, I do believe in you know that there is life out there beyond our world. So it wouldn't surprise me that they do have this advanced technology, and maybe it did come from from another world.
Yeah, and
so that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and one other thing I discovered when I went to Roswell, New Mexico, where supposed to UFO crash in one of the ranch, I discovered that the tale from that event is being distorted so much until now that is that the thing happened in that day is not the same is now is telling us all the stories is magnified, and then because it's one of the things the urban story says that that UFO crash in New Mexico, in Roswell, New Mexico, was the one went to Area 51. But when I was there, I interviewed some old guys, and I tried to, but the story is so distorted, and you see the business in Roswell, and then you see the story from the government about some dummies was testing from a parachute to test radiation. They have like a museum in Roswell where they present the dummies, the materials, the wood from the trees, or my pronunciation is so bad. But when you see the dummies, there were the 1950s. You see it now. You see, wow, they're so spectacular, well done. If somebody from those years saw these dummies, they would think is they are extraterrestrials. But they are so well done, and there is like almost a half a century. I don't know. It's they are amazing. Then you understand when you see all that some people probably they're confused some stories. I believe they have something over there, but I don't think is the things that we know they telling us about the guys, the green, the big eyes, extraterrestrial. They have something, but I don't think is the ones we know normally know.
Right. Honestly, I remember when the stealth bomber first came out years ago, and if you looked at it flying in the sky coming towards you, it looked like a flying saucer. It had the bubble on the top and then the skinny wings that, looked like the bottom part, until you got up and then you realized it was a stealth bomber. But coming straight at you, you would swear up and down it was a flying saucer. And that, I know, threw a lot of people off down there around Area 51, because Area 51, primarily, from what I understand, is for testing, testing this high, fancy-schmancy new stuff they've come up with, like Aurora and the Raptor and all those other planes that the military has developed. So, it amazes me. I remember my stepmother, she was a real big Art Bell fan. Listen to him every night. Well, I remember one time she talked my dad into going there to Area 51 where all of the little UFO hunters like to hang out at night and see if they can see the UFOs land. My dad telling me about, here's my dad says yes, and Shirley talked me into, we pulled the RV up there with everybody else in their RVs. We had the lawn chairs out. The binoculars, and everybody's sitting around waiting for the sun to go down, and we're sitting there for like 2 or 3 hours waiting for a UFO. He goes, I drank iced tea and just looked at the night sky. It's quite a thing that people love to go do,
Yeah, and it's very fun because when we went there twice, we went to that road because the highway is connected to the road to the Area 51. That road is called Extraterrestrial Highway. The government, local government, they name it Extraterrestrial Highway officially, and the sign says Extraterrestrial Highway. And then you can go and park the car, and we park the car over there, and stay all night to see. Mm-hmm. We can see something, but we never saw nothing.
Yeah. Well, you know, yep. I mean, that never really made any sense to me, all that about being there and trying to see the extraterrestrial crafts and everything, because if I was an extraterrestrial coming to Earth, I wouldn't go where everybody was expecting me to see, you know, to see. You know what I'm saying? I would go somewhere away from the crowds and from, you know, because you wouldn't want to be seen. That's just
it's a lot of stories, different stories, but some of the movie stories, and I can tell you a couple ones, but they are so fantastic. I don't know why I don't see a movie about those stories. I know, and I cannot do a movie about those stories because somebody told me. I don't know who invented that story, but because the Area 51 was not the only one I did about extraterrestrial. I did another one, a guy was so amazing, the story. They had like a I don't know what the name, would you put the bracelet? He had a extraterrestrial bracelet, and then it's the one you put in your arm, and then it was so fantastic. Even the Mexico City, the government of Mexico City, it gave him a protection to transport this thing. That was a long time ago, and I had photographs, he had video, so fantastic, and this is one of the stories I investigate. And the other story is a guy who worked in the Area 51, and he came, and he's the one who revealed all the tales about, because he worked in the UFO. He's a scientist who worked inside the UFO. The stories this guy is telling is so amazing. Maybe somebody will do a movie about that, because he's the one who said the government is doing the reverse engineering. It's disassembling the UFO to see how it's working. And he said a lot of technology we have right now is coming from those UFOs there. They have it. He said have like a three UFOs. One is a little piece. The second one is like a crash one, and the third one is a complete one. It's working.
Oh wow! Mm-hmm. Wow!
Yeah.
Wow! That's cool.
Now, I remember a few years ago down there over Mexico City, they had that one day where there were several of them during the daylight, and people were taking pictures. Has they ever figured out what that really was? Was it?
Well, in Mexico,
UFOs,
and we went to Mexico also to do something about that, and then they showed me like a sphere, nobody knows, like they said that it's like a metallic sphere floating in the sky of Mexico City, and we went and we discovered one, but when you see it, it's so. It looked like somebody from Earth built it, and then you don't know what to believe. Now it's so many cameras in the hands of the people, but now you don't see so many UFOs. Something is wrong, because when before, nobody had cameras like today. And you see more of UFOs. Now you see a UFO is a special effects, because so everybody now, if I can do a special effect very realistic, imagine some guy. And then you don't see that footage now, that video from UFOs floating in the sky. Maybe the extraterrestrial now know so many cameras now. I will not. Be so visible.
No, that makes sense what you're saying. That's true. So it could all just be, you know, some sort of conspiracy theory for whatever reason, you know.
It could also be a diversion. You know, look over here, don't see what we're doing over there. That could be also,
that's true.
You know.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I mean, I personally, I don't know how you two really believe in this, you know, but I really honestly believe that there is other life out there besides us, you know, on Earth. I mean, I just can't imagine that we have this huge universe out there plus other universes that, you know, and you tell me that we're the only planet in this huge universe that's got life. I just don't believe it. I don't buy it. So,
well, let me tell you, when I was a producer in another show, there was a talk show a long time ago, and it was a national show in Telemundo also. Because we put the telephone number and people could call us, one day some guy called me, one of my assistants called me, my assistant says, it's a guy who says he's an extraterrestrial. Oh, yeah? Okay, let me talk to him. And I talked to him for hours. But the stories his guy said was so amazing. One of the things he told me, was about God. Because I asked him how the extraterrestrial believe in God. And he said, well, they don't believe in God. They know God exists because he's another level. Because when humans reach that level, it's going to be a high level where God is present all the time. I was very impressed about that. And now another story. One of the things besides this guy, another guy called me, and he was very amazing because he sent me a video. And he said George Lucas stole his idea about Star Wars. It was, what?
Wow.
And then he started telling me about him and George Lucas when, I don't remember exactly where, but something happened. It was an accident where this guy lost his conscience and he was like in coma for a couple hours. And he said, in that time, he went and lived like a movie.
Wow.
If you see the Star Wars, he said, I lived that movie. And George Lucas was my roommate, and he stole my idea. But the story he told me it was an old guy. It was amazing because he said, when I was in coma, I was a pilot in a starship. I was like a Star Wars. I was flying and fighting for the government in another world. It's like a reincarnation in another life, but far away. And that was another story. I was impressed. I tried to do a show about that, but the guy died, and I never. I heard that video, the VHS he sent me was another amazing story. I can tell.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds interesting. That's really interesting.
It does sound interesting. Yeah, it does.
Now, have you ever talked to anybody that's talked about losing time and those types of things that usually gets tied into UFO experiences? We were talking about had that experience.
Well, no, really. To do a movie about when I was a producer, I was doing shows about the guys tried to do, because in those days the talk show I did was a. It was not actors. It was real people. It was long, long time ago. When they shift to actors in the talk shows, everything changed. Because you can put anybody. You pay that guy, you can say anything.
That's true.
And then now I believe the talk show, all the reality shows are like that. But to do a movie, when I was trying to do this movie, The Shadow in the Bed, I was researching what to do, and then I discovered, well, I had to be something very unique, something I wrote, and because I had to register, and I was thinking the legal stuff, all that thing, and later not to pay anything if something, well, if the movie going well, but it's why. Because a lot of people in this journey is come to me and they want to me do a movie about they write, and then sometimes I don't know because I have a small business trying to do something and if something going well I don't know how to
Tell us about your movie, The Shadow in the Bed. Tell us a little bit about
We're
running out of time.
Yeah.
Well, the movie was, the ending is different because a lot of people ask me, why The Shadow in the Bed? When I was registered, when I was asking for permits to shoot, because I asked for permits to shoot in the neighborhood, and I told me it's a porno movie because it's a shadow in the bed. And they go, no, it's a horror movie because like here in Chatsworth, in the valley, is the mecca of pornography filming here in San Fernando Valley. I didn't know that when I get the permit. I didn't know if I put bed, they were confused. Because when they presented the list, that was super funny because but I already registered the name the name of the movie is for the ending. The ending is a surprise. I'm not going to tell you, but it's something shift at the ending. They call it the shadow in the bed. But the movie, from the beginning to that point, is the story of this guy who lost his job on Friday, and then he wake up Saturday, and he's saying, oh, okay, I'm going to work. And he forgot he's fired from, you don't have any more job. But the wife, knocked out of his amnesia, and then because she's mean, lady, and he remembers. Oh man, yes, I'm unemployed. Well, he accepted, and then he started working in his project. He's like a little crazy, but he loved technology and he loved cameras and he had cameras around the house. He can, monitor his wife when he's coming and he can hide his little project because he's spending more money than he had. And the wife is getting nasty and nasty. But one moment, one of the videos he discovered is something big. It's not a rat because the wife says it's a rat around the house. You need to catch it. And then, the rat is a monster. But the monster is living below the house. So one of the things to shoot below the house was very... that was hard. We built a set in the backyard where it simulates the below the house, the place below the house. That was because it's a low budget, it's independent. That was so hard because it's not a sound stage. In that day, in those days, because it was like 3 weeks, I understood why they used a sound stage, because every cricket, every dog, we need to stop and then wait for the dog or the train to pass over and then start again the shooting. That was amazing, those 3-4 weeks of shooting, of production. I want to repeat it. The story at the end, the monster is got nuts, and then one of the things that he discovered, a lot of people is telling me, why you tell so much about the monster? Well, I believe that when I saw a movie, I want to know all the stuff is happening, because I'm seeing a lot of movies when you cannot see the monster, and they're big budget movies. The monster is like a man, like a 2 minutes, and when you see it, it's so dark. It's what I try to do differently. Well, maybe they are right, because when they said less is more scary. Well, I try to compensate with the story, with the music, all that. When they see the movie, they will. I hope they will understand why the monster. You can see it very well. Of course, in some movies they show it, but now the technology of the movies, I compete in, because one of the guys, my mentors I follow, he said, well, when you release your movie, you just not compete with the movies they're releasing this year. You are competing with the whole universe of movies. And he's right. I compete in, if I release my movie, I'm going to compete with from the first movie they release it until the one is releasing that day. Millions of options.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can understand that. It's that way with our books, the same way.
Exactly. I've been learning so much from this movie. Right now, my movie is in the final stages of production. Everything is finished. All the little special effects, because I don't know who thought when I was filming that not to put the video screens in the monitors when he's in his lab. Is just a green screen. That's nice, but now I'm thinking, oh, I will save all that time and money if I put just the video of the monitor, and the video in the monitor at that moment in production. I did a lot of mistakes when I thought, well, I will fix it in post. Never again.
Never again. But you know, that's what I mean. You know, you learn from that. So the next time, the next movie you make, you'll know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What to do, what not to do. So.
I'm so anxious to start the next one. My next movie is going to be a sci-fi horror. I don't know how, but it's going to be a sci-fi horror. Going to be some expensive, but I had already the idea, but as soon as I finish this, I already started with the next one, because it's multitasking. I have to do it as an independent filmmaker. You are multitasking.
That's true. Never stop.
Everything. Yeah, never stop.
But it's addictive, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's like writing stories. I get so mad that you just want to quit, but then you can't quit because it's the love of the story, you know.
Yeah. And I think one of my mistakes, I'm so detail-driven, and sometimes it's so much.
Right.
It's too much.
Right.
But just think of this. When you have it all done, it's all finished, and you can sit and watch it. You'll be able to go, I survived. I did it. And, you know, that's worth everything, you know.
It is.
And Lisa and I with our books, there's been times we've been writing a book, and you beat your head up on the wall, and you do rewrites and editing, and then you find you need to do more rewrites, and you're banging your head on the desk a few more times. And but when it's all said and done, and you can, you know, you're ready to put it out there for public consumption. It's like, phew, I survived that one. So,
that moment is going to be amazing when it's already in one file.
Yeah.
all the work in one file of, I don't know how many megabytes, but one file on one DVD or Blu-ray,
mm-hmm.
on one uh-huh. file in iTunes, is that going to,
yeah.
that thing, that moment is going to be amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Party,
yeah.
party.
yeah.
And I think
true, yeah.
your hard work will pay off, I mean, because you're getting it, you're getting spotlights on it, and you keep doing interviews like this, and that's what you have to do. Just keep getting it out there, and you'll find the audience that people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Horror is a big genre.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the exact statistics and everything, but to me, in my opinion, I think horror and romance could possibly be the two biggest genres out there. You know, so you've got a good genre. So you just got to find that perfect audience for it, and the problem, you know, is finding your audience.
That's true. Yeah,
you know,
I will.
Yeah, I think once the audience starts watching it, they'll see the passion he's put into. I mean, my goodness, the guy put 10 years into this. You said,
yeah,
it was 10 years
mm-hmm.
he worked on this. That's
a lot
of dedicated passion. Yeah,
sure is.
So you know.
So many,
that type
so
of dedication
things.
Will definitely show through in the finished product, and I know that the viewers are going to enjoy it and appreciate it. So,
I'm sure you do great.
Well, guys,
we're down to
9 minutes left. Hector, you got anything else you want to share with us before we have to call it a night?
Well, I appreciate everything you would talk about, and then. Just being a learning process all these years, so many fights, because one of the things when I started was a family thing, was my father, my mother, my brother, my wife, and friends. We started the production. Now it's just a few because there's so many fights. The next year, what I recommend, you never work with your family because so many problems. It's been tough to do it.
Right.
because everything is except for the master. I fight with my brother because he didn't present me a very scary monster, and we delayed for years, and then I tried to do it myself 2 years ago. When I saw that technology was so advanced, I can put it in my computer and do it myself. It's amazing mm-hmm. the technology, how it's. But now I'm thinking in the virtual reality movies, they are coming. So many things are coming. I hope I can do something for
mm-hmm.
my audience.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
I'm sure
it's going to be great. And once you get this one behind you, are you planning on diving into another one? Do you have another one that's kind of been sitting on the back burner?
Yeah, I have it's like a sci-fi horror. Of course,
mm-hmm.
low budget. When we talk about low budget, it's around 50 to 100,000. But it's not a super low budget. But yeah, it's a sci-fi. It's about time. It's like a Back to the Future thing, but it's to play with time. This time is going to be, but horror, with everything I learned from this, is going to be, actually, it's going to be amazing. I would love the process again, to start again, preparing,
mm-hmm.
because the first one, when I opened open cast to call all the actors, and they knew this for no pay. Like 200 people came to cast for the movie. That was one of the most amazing thing I did. A lot of people want just to work, even for free, for a project they think is nice. And I believe the next one is going to be, I hope, the same.
Oh, that sounds exciting. That sounds great.
Yeah. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really appreciate you coming and spending your time with us and telling us everything's going on. Let us know when it's going to be ready for release, okay?
Yeah,
yeah,
well,
so we can help promote it and everything. So we'll help you any way we can.
Yeah, we'll give a shout out for you and all that. Thank you again for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. Some great conversation. I tell you what, your Area 51 in Roswell stuff's pretty darn interesting. So
Thank you so much for the time. This is my second interview. I enjoy it a lot. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
It was our pleasure. We really enjoyed having you with us this evening. So anyway, everybody, go look up with Hector. We've got his website, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram links on Blog Talk Radio here. Or you can go to DesireeReads.com, go in the Desiree Reads Radio tab for the month of October, and you will find Hector's information there also. Go hook up with him and see what all he's doing and stay up with everything he's happening, because it sounds like he's got some great projects coming up for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Hector, you come back again when you have some new news for us. You're welcome to come back anytime.
Yeah. Oh, for sure I will. I enjoy it a lot. I will keep you informed.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Hector.
Thank you so much for the time.
All right, good night.
Good night. Thank you so much.
Oh, he's really nice. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
That was fun. I love talking about Area 51 and all the stuff out there.
Yeah, he's really a nice man. Boy, he learned a lot of interesting things, and I really enjoyed having him. I hope he does join us again. Well, next week. Next week is our third week of October, and we are going to have Dan Copeland joining us again.
Woo-hoo! Yay! I love Dan.
He's going to come back for another evening with us and fill us in on all the fun stuff he's been doing lately. So I know we're going to have a good time, so don't miss that show. And is there anything else we need to cover tonight, Lisa?
No, I think that's about it. I am reading Dan's book, and it's fabulous. I'm enjoying that story. So,
I know. I need to dig into it this week, too, because I need to have it done before the show. So,
it's an excellent story. So, that'll be fun next week talking about his book.
Everybody, Lisa and I are going to call it a night. Come back on Thursday evening, same time, same place, and we'll see you then.
All right. Good night.
Bye. Have a good one.